This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
But who's counting, right?
And his name is Major.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
please welcome Major Garrett
from the nation's capital.
Major, fantastic.
It's the Takeout.
This is a major achievement.
With CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent.
Major Garrett.
Yes, CBS. Yes, I.
Major Garrett.
Major, that's nonsense. And you should know better.
Is Major out of the doghouse?
The answer is yes.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett. We're back out in Washington, D.C. Restaurant Supra is our hosting restaurant. We thank them for their hospitality. Ladies and gentlemen, I told you several weeks ago that this show would devote considerable attention to the ongoing story of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This week we will do the same. And I know for some of you this story is feeling a little bit familiar. Maybe you're becoming slightly numb to the imagery out of Ukraine. Maybe you wonder if there's a reason to sort of move on. Well, let me just suggest a couple of things, particularly to our friends in New York City, traumatized this week by a shooting inside a subway station in Brooklyn. That was a traumatic event for the city of New York and, by extension, the country. Think about a subway in Ukraine, in which people have lived for weeks and weeks, missiles raining down just above their heads, unable to replenish themselves very well with food or water, uncertain about their future, and wondering if they can ever get out of that subway station to become a refugee fleeing down a road to an uncertain future. Just for context, I want to remind you of what's playing out hour by hour, day by day in Ukraine. And also that, let's just say you're not thinking so much about New York City, but you're thinking about inflation. Well, if you're thinking about anything that has wheat in it, it's affected by the war in Ukraine. If you're thinking about shipping and supply chain issues, it's affected by the war in Ukraine. So even our day-to-day life here in America, though it doesn't always feel that way, is affected by this war. So that's why I'm going to continue on the show to have a conversation about its many dimensions. One of the dimensions is what is happening in neighboring countries. And a couple of weeks ago, it occurred to me, I would like to know what the Polish ambassador to the United States can tell us about what Poland is going through. It's the largest recipient by number of refugees from Ukraine. What are the stresses? What are the adaptations? What's Poland's perspective on this ongoing, massive international story? To help us do that, the Polish ambassador to the United States is with us. Marek Magierowski. Not bad? Pretty good?
Thanks a lot for having me.
It's good
perfect
to have
pronunciation.
You. Very good. Thank you. So,
and believe me, I also think about inflation.
Yes, indeed. So,
by the way, we are having this meeting in a Georgian restaurant.
Yes.
And Georgia was another country invaded by Russia 14 years ago. So it's also pretty symbolic.
Symbolically important,
oh, yes.
No doubt. So big picture, Mr. Ambassador, what is Poland going through right now? What are the numbers? I've seen 2.6, 2.5 million refugees from Ukraine. Update us on that. Okay.
It's almost 2.7 million refugees who have already crossed the Polish border since the beginning of the hostilities. And as I've already said on multiple occasions during interviews which I have given here in America, this is probably the first humanitarian crisis in Europe's history in which the host country does not need to build refugee camps. There were some congressional delegations and politicians from Western countries visiting Poland over the last couple of weeks, and they were asking the Polish border guards or their counterparts from the Polish government, where are the refugee camps? We would like to visit one.
Right.
Turns out there are none, because an overwhelming majority of those refugees are being hosted right now in Polish homes by Polish families, of course, also in boarding houses and gyms, in schools, at stadiums, but most of them have been embraced by their Polish brethren, by Polish families. Many of them have decided to stay in Poland. Some of them returned to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Some re-emigrated to other European countries like Germany, France, or Sweden, Britain, also some to the United States. But according to a poll which came out 2 days ago, about one-third of those refugees who have arrived in Poland since the beginning of the war want to stay in Poland. And I'll tell you why. Because even before the war, there was fertile ground for the absorption of those refugees. Approximately 1.5 million Ukrainians had already lived and worked in Poland before the Russian aggression. So the Ukrainians who have arrived in Poland now, they already have their relatives and their mm-hmm. families in Poland, integrated into the Polish society, integrated into the Polish labor market. By the way, they were really integrated smoothly, impeccably mm-hmm. into the Polish society. And a few weeks ago, the Polish parliament approved a bill, a pretty innovative one, mm-hmm. which essentially facilitates the Ukrainian immigrants, the Ukrainian refugees' integration into our country. For example, they can apply for Polish IDs. Now, more than 800,000 people have already received officially a Polish ID. Mm-hmm. That allows them, for instance, to set up their own businesses. They can send their children to Polish schools. They are eligible for health insurance, which is universally free mm-hmm. in Poland, paid for by taxpayers. So a lot of benefits which the Ukrainian refugees have already received in Poland, a lot of solidarity and a lot of love.
Is there any stressors associated with this, economically, culturally, politically?
Definitely. This is also, we are trying not to use the term humanitarian crisis, but we can't refrain actually from using this term. It is a humanitarian and a social burden for the Polish state, for the local authorities, for municipalities. And that's why, for example, many mayors of Polish cities are now in talks with their counterparts in Europe and beyond, also in the United States, about the possibility of relocation of at least some of those refugees mm-hmm. to other countries. Of course, we can't force them to
right.
to migrate farther.
But maybe create an informal sister city relationship in
yes.
which refugees
yeah.
can be taken in on an ad hoc basis.
Yes, additionally, they concentrate mostly in big cities, which is mm-hmm. also quite an issue for us. So we would like to put it bluntly, to spread them out a little bit. Still, they are most welcome in Poland. We are mm-hmm. ready and willing to absorb even more waves of refugees from Ukraine because I don't believe this war will end soon.
There will be some, Mr. Ambassador, in my audience who will remember that wasn't the Polish government's reaction to refugees coming from Iraq or Afghanistan or in 2015 from Syria.
Yeah.
What's the difference and why?
There is a distinct difference between these two crises. In the other case, we had that crisis and along the Polish-Belarusian border.
Yes.
It was engineered and artificially created by the Belarusian authorities, by President Lukashenko, mm-hmm. Who had been elected, by the way, in the rigged elections, as you may remember.
I do indeed.
And those refugees were actually transferred physically from Baghdad, from Afghanistan, from other Middle East countries to Belarus, and then they emigrated further towards the Polish border, and they were actually literally pushed by Belarusian police, by Belarusian soldiers towards the border. They were pushed towards the Kolsantyna wires and the wall which we are now building along this border, and all
the policy
which the Polish government conducted at the time was strictly based on international law. Because in this case, when we are talking about Ukrainian refugees, we are talking about a country ravaged by war,
mm-hmm.
and Poland is the first country under international law in which those refugees can seek asylum and can seek protection. Unlike all those refugees that you have just mentioned from mm-hmm. Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, Belarus was the first country, actually, because they arrived by planes, mostly, from their home countries to Belarus. It was an operation, not a humanitarian or migration mm-hmm. crisis. Mm-hmm. It was a deliberate operation by the Belarusian regime to destabilize, to create chaos, destabilize, to create chaos along the Polish-Belarusian border and in the wider region.
Very good. That is the voice of the Polish ambassador to the United States. His name is Marek Magierowski. It's very good to have you with us. We are at Super Restaurant. When we come back, one of the things I want the audience to understand and appreciate, and I know they will the more we talk, before he was a diplomat, his first posting before America was Israel, by the way, he was a journalist and columnist. And as all journalists and columnists know, you never stop being that one way or the other.
We're going to talk about my shameful past.
Exactly, exactly. So I want to have the ambassador describe what's going on in Ukraine as a story, as he sees it. When we come back, I'm Major Garrett, segment two of The Takeout in just one moment.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Our thanks again to Supra, our host restaurant. We are with the Polish ambassador to the United States. His name is Marek Magierowski. Mr. Ambassador, Tim Penny in the background there. You were a journalist and a columnist before becoming a diplomat. You saw me in the opening of the program describe my orientation to this as a story, but what is your orientation to what's happening in Ukraine as a story of Europe, as a story for the United States, as a story for the world?
It's a story of a European country which was under the communist yoke for many years, like us. The difference is, and again, this is a very distinct difference, we have never been a Soviet republic. Mm-hmm. Poland has never been a part of the Soviet Union, luckily. On the other hand, I myself have been lucky to have lived under both systems, because I was born under communism, I experienced command economy, and then I lived under democracy and under capitalism, which was pretty savage, by the way, at the very beginning of our transformation, but I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I know these two experiences, which are very important for me in terms of my education and more my moral approach to what is going on right now in Ukraine. Then in at the beginning of the 90s, when the Berlin Wall collapsed and mm-hmm. communism finally demised, Poland grew much faster. Ukraine grew a little slower, also because of the post-communist legacy. But now we can see in plain view that we are talking about a European nation and a European country, unlike Russia, in which those vestiges of communism are still so vivid. Mm-hmm. And not only communism, the Stalinism.
Stalinism,
which
yes.
Which ended mm-hmm. with the death of that despicable dictator in the 50s, but somehow they remained in the Russian mentality. Mm-hmm. It's so deeply seared in their mindset. And we can see that in their narrative, in their rhetoric, mm-hmm. in all those absurd allegations of the necessity to denazify right. Ukraine. So this is a story of Ukraine, a country which, of course, is not immune to some phenomena which we have also experienced, like corruption, political turbulences mm-hmm. over those last three decades. But we can see now, again, I would like to stress this very clearly, that unlike Russia, Ukraine is a profoundly European country, and the Ukrainians have absolutely deserved to be part of the European Union and NATO.
And continuing that narrative, what are the stakes?
Our freedom, our independence, our sovereignty. And I don't mean solely the so-called eastern flank and countries which are geographically located between Russia and Ukraine and the part of Europe which was always independent and free after World War II. We weren't. Mm-hmm. And now we fear and we are very much concerned that we have already reached a turning point in our contemporary history. And that's why, for example, we are insisting on the necessity to arm ourselves and also to arm Ukraine, because we cannot engage militarily in a major full-out confrontation with Russia, also because Ukraine is not a NATO member state, and we technically and legally and also politically, we cannot defend Ukraine directly. But what we can do, and what we have been doing for the last couple of weeks, is deliver as many and as sophisticated weapons to Ukraine as possible.
On this program last week, David Miliband, who I'm sure you're familiar with, President and CEO of the International Rescue Committee, said, "Major, you and your audience should prepare yourselves for harder, grimmer, uglier days ahead." He didn't know what that meant, but a day later, there was a missile strike on a train station. Yeah. Do you agree with that, the coming Russian offensive now directed primarily to the east and southeast of Ukraine?
You know, the mood has been fluctuating over the last couple of days, because nobody believed that the Russians would be performing so miserably in Ukraine in terms of the military operations. Everybody was sure, also among the Western political elites, that Kiev would be taken in 72 hours.
I'm sure your government, like our government, feared that before the invasion.
And I can't blame anyone for this kind of predictions, because it was natural to think about the Russian army as a behemoth, which would, you know, just
lay waste,
crush everyone. Yes, they would lay waste to every Ukrainian city.
Topple the capital, topple the government, put in a puppet regime.
Well, I'm wondering how many books on wartime logistics those Russian generals have ever read. I've read some. I'm not a military expert, but I believe I know a little bit more about logistics than some of those Russian commanders. So it is a grave embarrassment for the Russian army. So far, they have lost, according to latest estimates, about 500 tanks, loss of casualties. So the losses they are suffering right now are at least comparable to what they experienced in Afghanistan, a war which lasted
a decade.
So it's very hard to predict what will happen next week or in a month's time, 2 months. Nobody can say what kind of war, what will be the next stage of this confrontation. The Russians are apparently regrouping now. They are moving their units to the eastern part of Ukraine. The question is to what extent Putin has actually changed the military goals of this special military operation, whether he will be satisfied with somehow reconquering those two breakaway provinces in the east, or creating that land corridor which would connect Luhansk and Donetsk with the Crimean Peninsula. I don't have that much hubris to analyze and navigate Putin's mind. The one thing I'm sure of is that we are dealing with pure evil. Absolutely. All those scenes and images that we have seen over the last couple of weeks are absolutely outrageous, abhorrent. You mentioned the shelling of the Kramatorsk railway station, bombing hospitals, killing indiscriminately defenseless civilians, targeting civilian infrastructure. But this is part and parcel of the Russian army's modus operandi. We have seen it so many times in the past. During
its
the World
military
War II
doctrine is escalate to de-escalate, meaning wear down your enemy by whatever means you possibly can, including
instill
civilians,
fear,
instill
intimidate
fear.
Intimidate civilians. This is something absolutely unacceptable. And no wonder so many Western politicians are now using the term genocide. They are not they don't shy from using some very
war crimes,
harsh adjectives describing and defining what the Russian army is doing now in Ukraine. But I want to be clear on one particular issue. This is not Putin's war. This is Russia's war. And there is a tendency among some politicians in Western Europe to blame Putin for what is happening now in Ukraine. But when you look at the polls, I know the polls which are published in Russia are not very credible. But anyway, if you have between 70 and 80% of the population supporting the war.
Yep.
They are, you know, zombified.
They believe it's a war of liberation. They believe it's a denazification effort. They buy, whether we call it a branded...
in an information bubble.
Right. Whether we brand it propaganda, they believe it and they support it, which is the distinction you're trying to make.
Yeah. So, and again, I believe Ukraine is not the last item on Putin's menu. And that's why, if you ask me, if we are concerned, if we are really preoccupied with what is occurring right now in Ukraine, of course we are. Of course we are. We have been trying to alert the world about Russia's neo-imperial ambitions and about Putin's malign intentions. We've known Russia for so many years. We have excellent experts who have written, you know, thousands of pages of analysis about Russian politics, Russia's policy, and the brutality of the Russian regime. And now it turns out it is so hard to convince some of our European partners, for example, to block oil and gas imports from Russia, in spite of the fact that everybody is acutely aware that buying oil and gas and coal and other raw materials from Russia, we are financing his war machine.
With that, we're going to take a break. Mr. Ambassador, with your indulgence, that's a great point. I want to pick up on that on the other side of this break. I'm Major Garrett. Poland's Ambassador to the United States, Marek Magorowski, is our guest. More of this conversation from Supra, our host restaurant, in just one moment.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. By the way, however you find this show, whether you're listening on a podcast, going for a run, a walk, on your treadmill, it's great to have you with us. Radio stations around our country, thank you for finding us. CBS News streaming, it's always great to be with you. And on Sirius XM, POTUS Channel 124, we're on lots of different platforms. However you find us, thanks for being with us each and every week. I'm Major Garrett. The Polish Ambassador to the United States, Marek Magorowski, is our special guest. Mr. Ambassador, you were making a point before we went to break about... maybe one term is squeamish, another is economically nervous. European politicians and or countries unwilling to take an economic step that would, in your words, if not disable, limit the economic wherewithal of Russia to continue to prosecute this war in Ukraine. Be more specific.
There are some experts who argue that if we block oil, gas and coal imports from Russia entirely, this war would end in 2 weeks because Putin would not have financial resources to continue his military operation in Ukraine. I wouldn't be so optimistic and enthusiastic about the effects of this of the strengthening of the sanctions. I'm convinced that we have to close all the loopholes which still exist in the sanctions packages which have been introduced so far by major European and not only European powers. There are some countries like Germany and France and Austria and Hungary which are more hesitant than others to tighten this noose and more dependent on imports of Russian commodities. We were more prescient, if you will. Many years ago, we started thinking about how to render Poland independent of imports of Russian gas. We began to build an LNG terminal, the first
liquefied
one
on
the Polish stretch of the Baltic coast. In a few months, we will inaugurate the so-called Baltic pipeline, which will deliver gas from the Norwegian continental shelf via Denmark to Poland. Our long-term contract with Gazprom expires this year by October.
Gazprom is the nationalized firm in Russia.
We are not going to renew it, and we will be entirely independent of Russia as gas supplier to our country, as opposed to Germany, to Austria, to Hungary, and many other countries in Europe. So I do understand this hesitation. I had the opportunity to talk to the German ambassador to the United States a few days ago, and she said to me pretty clearly that it would, if we decide to, if we choose to impose this this strict embargo on imports of Russian gas, that that would cause a calamity to the German economy. I understand the, these fears, and I understand the German politicians' misgivings about this next step. But I believe that we also have to be ready and determined to make our own sacrifices, as Poland is.
And I want you, Mr. Ambassador, to convey to my audience some important history that Poland has in this larger conversation. On this program 3 weeks ago, H.R. McMaster, one of the many national security advisors to former President Trump, said what's happening in Ukraine is analogous to what happened to Poland in 1939. Acquaint my audience with that if they may not remember, and why you think it is or isn't comparable or analogous to what's happening in Ukraine.
This is what I once said in an interview, that Poland and some other countries on the eastern flank are doing for Ukraine what some other countries did not do for Poland in 1939 when we were invaded not only by Germany, this is not common knowledge here in the United States, but also by the Soviet Union.
We were early in September by Germany, late in September 1939
September
by the Soviets.
And 16 days later, we were invaded we were stabbed in the back, actually, by the Soviet army. So we were attacked and occupied by two neighboring superpowers. And then we knew, we know what happened, that the appeasance and this attempt to appease the Germans, to appease the Soviets at the very beginning of the war, turned out to be critical in Europe's response to that to the Nazi threat.
Right.
And then we know what happened. France, Denmark, the Netherlands, Norway, Battle of Britain.
Everything fell.
And so on. Everything fell. Europe was almost
consumed.
Entire Europe was occupied by Germany. Then Russia. Germany attacked Russia. So change of alliances. We want to prevent that scenario now in Europe. And we are pretty serious about that. Of course, this is what
And the seriousness of that is in part what you try to communicate to European nations unwilling to take more aggressive economic moves. If you don't take them, other more dreadful things may follow.
I will tell you what our dilemma is right now and what dilemma we are facing. We should ask ourselves whether we want to defend our freedom and our independence in Ukraine, delivering weapons to the Ukrainian armed forces and helping President Zelensky prevail, or we want to defend freedom in Warsaw, in Krakow, in Berlin, in Stockholm, even in Paris. That's the question. And I think most politicians in those countries have to answer that question sincerely.
Do you think Ukraine can win?
I do. I didn't believe in that scenario 2 weeks ago. Now I do. They have a very tight window of opportunity right now. We said a few minutes ago that the Russians are now regrouping. They are moving their units to the eastern part of Ukraine. Probably they have already resigned themselves to just conquer this part of Ukraine, not the whole country, which is a bad sign and a good sign too. Because I believe they have not yet unlocked their whole potential. They have still hundreds of thousands of conscripts which have not been sent yet to the front lines. They can be sent to Ukraine overnight. They still have a lot of equipment, in spite of the fact that their losses have been massive. But still, the Russian army is pretty powerful. Not very well commanded. Logistically, it's an utter mess. But we should fear the military might of the Russian army. We should not, you know, delude ourselves into thinking that we are now dealing with a military dwarf. It's still a military giant.
So let me engage you at this level, Mr. Ambassador. Everything you just said resonates, both historically and in the current moment. As you well know, in the latter months of the Second World War in Europe, it was a war of enormous savagery on both sides. Things that would have not been contemplated earlier in that war were not only contemplated but carried out. Massive firebombing and all that to end the war, to achieve victory at whatever cost. I use that as a preamble to say, I understand that Ukraine is not a NATO country, and diplomatically and politically, there are rules against engagement. But to use your argument, if you extend this to, are you defending Ukraine or do you want to defend Paris and Berlin and other parts of Europe not yet invaded?
And you're going to ask me about the no-fly zone.
Or anything that's direct military engagement to achieve for the Ukrainians victory there now, even if it means a direct military engagement. Because some on this show have said, we're already there. It's essentially already there, and we're the, meaning the West, is the only side adhering to this distinction. The Russians aren't and won't.
My impression is that we are pushing those boundaries now slightly, bit by bit. 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, we heard also from the current American administration voices which objected to further and deeper military engagement. There was that ongoing debate about so-called offensive weapons. We were all talking about, the politicians and military experts were talking about defensive weapons, because it is a defensive war. But how can you defend your country only with defensive weapons facing such a huge military operation? So now the mood has changed. We are no longer talking about, we are not making that distinction between defensive and offensive weapons. This morning we have heard about a new plan and a very long list of weaponry, which is going to be sent by $800
million. $800
million allocated for weaponry supposed to be transferred immediately to Ukraine.
Hold that thought, Mr. Ambassador.
Howitzers. Helicopters.
And more. Hold that thought. More of our conversation with the Polish Ambassador to the United States. I'm Major Garrett. Segment 4 of The Takeout coming up in just 1 second.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome back to The Takeout. Our thanks to Supra, our host restaurant. Good to be out and about again. Polish Ambassador to the United States is our special guest, Marek Magorowski. Mr. Ambassador, you were talking about this announcement from the Biden administration, $800 million. This is announced on April 13th. We were recording this the afternoon of April 13th. I always like to remind you of that, folks, because fast-moving events may overtake certain things, but that's not only a lot of money, but it's offensive weapons, howitzers.
A lot of hardware.
Yes. And that is in itself a structural change in thinking and deployment.
As I said, we have to defend our freedoms and our independence, our territory in Ukraine without engaging Russia in a direct military confrontation. Nobody needs a confrontation with the Russian Federation. This is what also many Western politicians have been stressing over the last couple of days. NATO General Secretary Jens Stoltenberg said this pretty explicitly. On the other hand, if you don't mind,
please,
I would like to tell you pretty frankly that Mr. Putin has already achieved what we have been struggling to accomplish for so many years. He has strengthened the Ukrainian national identity. He has proven that Ukrainians and Russians are not the same nation, are not the same people. He has reinvigorated the European Union. He has triggered a dramatic paradigm shift in Germany's policy.
Yes.
Especially in terms of energy security. He has pushed Sweden and Finland towards NATO. The two prime ministers of these two countries have already announced that they would apply for NATO membership shortly, which is quite an event.
All of these are strategic setbacks for Russia.
I don't know whether he expected that. I don't know, by the way, to what extent he realized what is going on in Ukraine right now, what his closest aides are telling him. Mm-hmm. Whether he... We mentioned that at the beginning of our conversation. What is the picture he is getting?
Right.
For example, from his daily briefings with his with the guys who work in Russian intelligence, for example. It's quite a natural phenomenon to submit, to deliver information to your superior, especially if his name is Putin, which would not, you know, jangle his nerves. And that's why I believe that he's not getting the whole picture of what is occurring right now in Ukraine.
Mr. Ambassador, I'd like to ask you, I imagine your government had an assessment of President Zelensky before the war. Has its assessment changed since the war began?
I think Zelensky is now a superhero for many of us. It's incredible because he is a lawyer by profession. Then he became a comedian, an actor. And then he became, pretty surprisingly, it was also a surprise for Poland that he became president. But from the very beginning of his presidency, the Polish president, Andrzej Duda, established a very close and a very friendly relationship with him. So now we saw those pictures this morning.
April the 13th.
President Duda, accompanied by his three other friends from Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia, his three counterparts from the Baltic countries, paid a visit to Kiev. They spoke with Mr. Zelensky. Another sign and another symbol of solidarity. They just wanted to show how united we are, how coherent our message is to President Zelensky. So his image worldwide has changed dramatically. And he's the leader of the free world right now, actually.
It feels that way. Yeah. It certainly feels that way. Let me ask you a couple of basic questions. Does Poland or has Poland experienced any kind of cyber attack from the Russians during this invasion?
Of course.
It has?
Yes. Not on a massive scale, but yes, of course. I know there is an ongoing debate about to what a degree the Russians have been using this tool from the beginning of the hostilities. And I happened to read a lengthy article about cyber warfare in the case of the war in Ukraine. It's not so clear that the Russians somehow refrained from using these methods and cyber toolbox in order to cripple, for example, the Ukrainian economy, the Ukrainian cyber infrastructure, websites of Ukrainian authorities. But Poland, yes, we have also experienced this kind of attacks.
But nothing that has destabilized
the
country.
No, absolutely.
And that's because they haven't used all they have, or your guards and defenses are pretty good?
I think that they, when you start a war, you usually attack physically and kinetically some targets, which in some cases also harbor critical infrastructure. So if you want to bomb a power grid, you don't need to destabilize it electronically, right? So I think that the Russians believe that they would destroy at least part of the Ukrainian infrastructure without engaging the units which specialize in cyber warfare.
But to be clear, Poland has experienced some form of cyber intrusions from Russia.
Yes. Many years, by the way.
As this country has as well. What is the level of anxiety within Poland about being a either intentional or unintentional victim of a stray bit of fire coming from the Ukraine war across your border?
Of course we are concerned. There was that one missile attack very close to our border. So it was like about 10 or 15 miles from the border. So people who lived on the Polish side, they saw the windows in their houses tremble from the blast. So it was pretty, you know, impressive and disquieting for many people. I know many, you know, I have many friends back in Poland who are just freaking out when they hear all those nuclear threats pronounced by President Putin. Now they have a little bit eased up on those on that madness, but still it's really disturbing when you hear someone, the leader of a nuclear superpower, saying that they might use their nuclear arsenal to attack NATO countries.
Mm-hmm. And for my audience's benefit, should it think of Poland as the significant transshipment point for these materials moving
only a,
in
no,
to
it's
Ukraine?
Not only a hub for weapons deliveries to Ukraine. I think Poland has also become much more vital politically.
Mm-hmm.
Also for the current U.S. administration, I believe that that the Americans have already had a different perception of Poland. Now, this has changed, and I believe that in terms of our political and also military cooperation, Poland has become a much more important partner. There was that discussion in Poland for many years about Germany's and Poland's role in the security architecture in Europe and beyond. Germany has always been the focal point,
mm-hmm.
not only of the American military presence in Europe, so many American and NATO bases in Germany, and so few in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is also changing, and there is now talk about locating permanent bases in Poland and in other countries on the eastern flank. And I think Poland will be one of the of those countries in which we would gladly host many more American troops.
To use terminology from a bygone era, Poland might be a frontline state. Mr. Ambassador, it's been
it
a
is.
Great... It is a frontline
well,
state.
Is.
Already is. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. For our radio audience, we need to say farewell. For those watching on CBS News streaming and listening on the podcast, stay tuned, as I know you always do, for the Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. We'll see you next week.
Every day, our world gets a little more connected, but a little further apart. But then, there are moments that remind us to be more human.
Thank you for calling Amica Insurance.
Hey, I was just in an accident.
Don't worry, we'll get you taken care of.
At Amica, we understand that looking out for each other isn't new or groundbreaking. It's human. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
From CBS News, this is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Welcome to your Takeout Outtake Especial. I'm Major Garrett. Our thanks to Supra, our host restaurant. Good to be back out and about. We are joined by the Polish ambassador to the United States, Marek Margarewski. Mr. Ambassador, for our audience that may know and may feel it deeply, and for those who don't know, describe the Polish-American experience and the Polish American history as seen by you and your government.
How many hours do we have?
We got 5 minutes and 15 seconds.
It's a very long history.
It is.
I'll tell you an anecdote.
Yes.
I was in Tallahassee,
mm-hmm.
the capital of Florida,
yes.
a few months ago, meeting with Governor DeSantis, and I was accompanied by one of my colleagues from the embassy. We were sitting at the airport, a tiny one in Tallahassee,
mm-hmm.
and there was one police officer on duty at that airport. And we were talking, I was talking to my colleague in Polish, and he heard what language we were speaking in. And he just turned around and asked us, "Are you speaking in Polish?" And I said, "Yes." "My wife is Polish." Of all places, a single police officer in Tallahassee,
yes.
whose wife was Polish.
Mm-hmm.
So many people who have Polish roots.
Right.
I did not even expect that when I
Upper
arrived
Midwest,
in Washington.
Upper Midwest, United States, for sure. Chicago,
yeah.
obviously.
Chicago is the second largest Polish city
mm-hmm.
after Warsaw. So many good feelings, good vibes.
Yes.
When I also had a hearing at in a parliamentary committee in the lower house of the Polish parliament before I was officially appointed as Polish ambassador to the U.S. And what I said in my presentation was a very clear fact that Poles also built this country.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch all those Hollywood movies about the origins of your country, you usually see Italians, Irish, some Jews, Germans,
mm-hmm.
Poles on the sidelines.
Hey, yeah.
Pulaski, Kosciuszko, mm-hmm. that's okay. But we tend to forget that there were also architects, engineers, designers, artists, athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Musial,
mm-hmm.
one of the famous baseball players.
Yes.
How many of you know what his roots were? And so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it is also my role as Polish ambassador here to remind Americans and also to remind my fellow countrymen mm-hmm. to what extent, how largely we contributed as Poles to the American culture, to the American politics, to the American economy.
My mother's people, the Swedes, get left out of the American story with some degree of regularity, too. So I understand. I have some familiarity with that experience. So, Mr. Ambassador, we have on the show three questions we ask every single guest. And I'm going to give you the three questions. Our audience loves the answers because they learn something with each and every one of the answers. So, most influential or one of the most influential books you've read in your life?
Okay.
One of your favorite movies, and it can be a Polish movie, it can be an American movie, it can be any kind of movie. And if you're flying back to Poland or in Poland and taking a long drive or a long train ride and you're really going to enjoy some music, what kind of music are you most likely to listen to, either by artist or genre?
Last week I was in Louisiana, mm-hmm. in New Orleans, mm-hmm. so you can imagine what kind of music is my favorite.
Jazz?
Yes. Books. I graduated from Hispanic Studies.
Mm-hmm.
In Poznan, back in Poland. So I'm somehow submerged in Spanish and Latin American literature. Mm-hmm. I would recommend Carlos Fuentes to everyone. Also Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be very innovative in this particular sphere. Movies? It's difficult, mm-hmm. really. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We would have to talk much longer about
it. We'll talk, and if something comes up to you. If you are back in Poland and someone asks you, who's never been to America, what's America really like? How would you finish that sentence?
America's like, I can feel freedom here. Mm-hmm. You know, we always, when we lived under communism, we always aspired to be as American as possible. Mm-hmm. Or as German as possible. But when we were talking about Germany, it was not about a freedom of expression, freedom of movement. It was about wealth. We wanted to be as rich as the Germans. But when we were talking and thinking about America, we always wanted to be as free as the Americans. I feel free here.
That's great. Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for your time. It's been a great pleasure, great honor to meet you and talk to you and get your perspective. Hope you enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Major Garrett. Thanks for hanging out at The Takeout. And many thanks again to Supra, our host restaurant. We'll see you next week.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari, Jamie Benson, Sarah Cook, Ellie Watson, Jake Rosen, and Ashley Armstrong. CBSN production by Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, go to takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News.
If you like The Takeout, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.